Glenn McGee returns from Singapore, where he attended and presented at the International Bioethics Conference of the United Nations and UNESCO. He tells us what happened and what happens next in this edition of the Bioethics Channel, which is a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org, practicalbioethics.org. Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair for Bioethics at the center. Welcome back, my friend. Are you over the jet lag?
Yeah, I think so. I this morning I woke up about 3 o'clock and cleaned an espresso machine, so my wife might say otherwise. But and I've stopped looking at my watch to make sure that, you know, that the flip of 12 hours is – so I think I'm probably back to normal now.
Well, that's good, whatever normal is.
Whatever normal
is. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's good. Well, now, you wore a few hats in Singapore for this conference. Give us a brief overview of what your roles were at this International Bioethics Conference.
Well, this was a lot of fun and obviously a real honor, and I was very much appreciative of UNESCO and the so-called UNESCO Chairs Unit. UNESCO had some years ago built a mechanism for the study of bioethics, and as you know, UNESCO is United Nations essentially think tank / social and economic policy group, as best I can describe it. And by using the mechanism essentially of endowed chairs, they then built out units around the world. And they recognize what I think a lot of us have begun to see. For example, you've seen this too on the web, that there's a huge audience of interested people in India and around Southeast Asia in these subjects. And while I've had some chances to speak in Asia to various groups or to attend other conferences, and of course bioethicists have always held conferences in these beautiful locations, I was, as I said, very grateful to have the opportunity to participate in what I think was the first deliberate attempt to bring people together around, you know, Singapore being on the equator, but kind of in the middle of a bunch of different cultures and countries, and built around, I think, in a unique way, a mandate to build global standards in the way that the UN seems always to aim for things that in the United States are also very much important. How do we educate medical students and lawyers and mid-career professionals about ethical issues in medicine in a way that takes seriously the fact that some of our problems, you know, the Terry Schiavo case just wouldn't have happened in Indonesia. And the we have to take seriously that a lot of the things about the American history of bioethics, which for most people is the history of bioethics. I can't count the number of times I've heard someone give a lecture about the history of bioethics and talk about Tuskegee experiment in Alabama to a group of bewildered people from Poland.
They have no idea what it is.
No idea what we're talking about. Yeah. And they have their own history, which we have unfortunately missed to some degree because of the barriers of politics and so on. It was fun to be there to talk and to listen. I felt like that a lot of the things that went on in the interaction were very useful for me. And so, again, I was very grateful.
What about the data that you gathered about the state of bioethics programs and projects? That was something that you presented. What was it that you found as you went through this data and what you communicated to this group?
There were three parts to this. One part was conference. One part was sort of an educational piece. And another part had to do with building steps for going forward. And the piece that I presented in the conference that opened the conference, actually, was a description of where bioethics is now from one person's perspective. And it was a presentation of actually a couple of different sets of data, one about that's been going on more than 12 years, an ongoing descriptive study of bioethics programs in the United States along a variety of different metrics. So it's become very easy in the U.S. to look at the impact that people's publications have, and then in the aggregate to look at how bioethics centers and programs and even grant-making agencies, how well they do. And there are some metrics for what well means in the U.S. They're better developed here, I think, than other places, largely because people who work in bioethics in the U.S. are now ensconced in these centers, like the Center for Practical Bioethics, are built around very honest, sincere goals that involve research and the same kinds of things that you would apply to other disciplines. And so, you know, you can, and deans do, and provosts and presidents and everybody else, point to the same kinds of standards for an ethicist that you might point to for a cellular biologist, which isn't to say they have the same skills, but the same metrics can now be said to apply. And so people are judged with uniform standards about rigor. Do you publish? Are you cited when you publish? Do you speak? If so, where, how, what kinds of commissions are you on, et cetera? Whereas in the majority of the world, it is not the case that there are clear standards. And there's even a great deal of the debate that in the U.S. really took place in the early 90s, which is a debate about whether bioethics is even a part of the profession of academia or should properly be thought of as just sort of a thing that bioethics equals you should be ethical, or bioethics is a skill set that everybody should have, or whatever. So I talked about to answer your question, I talked about the standards that we can and do use in the U.S., and then I looked at some of the places and journals and people and sort of upcoming issues that define what has been successful in ways that I thought would be useful to other countries who are trying to get beyond their early efforts in bioethics, or whose medical schools and so on are demanding that they be leaders globally too.
What did you find as you presented to this group and you started the interaction? What struck you about the questions and the comments that came from the people who listened to you?
Maybe I do have jet lag because this is only coming back to me as you asked the question.
Cool.
It was a really interesting interaction in that respect. I mean, you often when you give a talk, somebody's eyes will light up or a tomato will come forward. But in this group, it was really interesting. It was electrifying, actually, to watch responses to different kinds of comments. So as I started to walk through, for example, the different journals that are in the English-speaking literature of bioethics, what they do, how long their histories are, how much they publish. Some of that's just kind of, I could have been a librarian and done an excellent job at that presentation. Then you go to the next step. Well, here is what happens when articles are published in these places. And then I showed some of the data that's been compiled about results of presidential commission findings and things that have been published, self-published essentially by different groups, including the UN and UNESCO. And then I looked at journal articles in places like BMJ and Nature and so on. And I looked at the bioethics journals and I pointed to what happens. Does it appear in the media? Does it appear, how and where and what? And people's eyes just lit up. I had a Chinese dean of a school of medicine, a relatively prominent school of medicine in China, say that this was precisely the opposite of the way that she would hope to survive in her environment, because what we were pointing to as successes that would encourage a dean to keep money flowing or encourage philanthropists to support the endeavor, that getting onto the radar screen could be enormously dangerous for her. And so she's fighting to get into the curriculum. But if it were to happen that one of her, people published an article that was somewhat controversial on stem cells, at least in her case, the effect for the bioethics program could be that it'd be shut down. It's not terribly surprising, but it was a little surprising. And so what she was struggling with was the idea that, in fact, now that there are global standards and she's expected to be prominent and do a good job with her ethics center, she's got to find a way to think of the activity of bioethics by her bioethics faculty as being good to the degree that other people in the field think it's good, when we now know that the measure of that is, are you creative, thoughtful, rigorous, et cetera? And also, do you advance some new claim, which is also very controversial? I mean, you can publish all day long about how fabulous China is, but if it's wrong, it won't get any attention, it won't be interesting, it won't come out in a good journal.
Would it be fair to say then that bioethics how it's viewed and how it's used would vary from country to country because it's viewed differently than, say, Indonesia or Germany or the United States.
Yeah, it's very absolutely. It is so interesting to me. For years, we have tolerated the varieties of two different things. One, the varieties of cultural norms. And there's a huge conversation, of course, in bioethics about whether or not norms are cultural or properly could be, or by contrast, whether organizations like the United Nations should be promoting not only their Declaration of Human Rights, but other bioethics declarations, which they have a curriculum to teach, and thus promoting the idea that certain things are non-negotiable, right? There are ways in which that's an impossible thing to promote. I mean, there are countries where the idea of autonomy is always mitigated by facts about families or about gender or whatever. And the UN's effort to engage bioethics would fail, absolutely, were they to insist that essentially American principles of Beachman Childress were the only way to do anything.
Or any kind of one size fits all.
But this is, there's a lot more lawyer in bioethics globally. And with each passing year, I'm noticing that that's not receding. It's actually increasing. A whole lot more involvement by lawyers.
Is that good or bad?
I think it's terrible, frankly. Not because I don't love lawyers, but because I think that when I say involvement of law, I mean it in the most narrow, minimalist sense. Involvement by people who are who believe that bioethics buttresses malpractice and other kinds of standards, or that its goal is to build policies about knowns, as opposed to the other more rich understanding of law, where it's about the theory of what's right and wrong. And that sort of involvement obviously is very helpful. I wish we had more of it here. But the big piece here is, on the one hand, you've got the global debate about can you have global bioethics? And the other, you have the global question of whether or not it's possible for different countries to function together in any way more than just the standard scholarly conference. I mean, for years now, literally for years, decades, just like in every other disciplinary area, bioethics has had the interlopers who just sort of fly around from place to place in airplanes and give the same talk over and over again. And it's good and helpful and necessary. And for many people, it's an important part of your career that you're able to do that at a certain point. That's not where we're at now. Where we are, I think, is in a position of the world recognizing that bioethics is going to be the same as every other discipline, standardized by the force of data. There is no resisting, as John Dewey would say, there is no resisting that the natural sciences, the methods and rigor of the natural sciences would eventually be imposed on the social sciences. And as people have to solve their public health problems, if they've got to deal with the fascinating to me, the number one area of interest in bioethics globally right now is disaster bioethics. A phrase I'd heard two or three people claim to have invented this phrase in the U.S. in the wake of Katrina and so on. But it's not just the situation with Japanese nuclear waste.
Well, that's really not all that surprising, is it, with the earthquake in Japan and so forth?
And tsunami. And
sure.
Right. And so all these things have much more than I would have. It isn't surprising, but I didn't guess it. Disaster bioethics is a piece of focus on something that has shifted bioethics. Globally, the interest in so-called precautionary principles, there's been a lot of stuff about, enhancement and so on. It's not interesting to people who are impoverished and in terrible situation. Disaster bioethics brings into play a whole different set of moral norms and questions and so on. It also engages American methods and British methods that are perhaps slightly more advanced, where you see a lot more bioethics articles that are based in, actual studies.
You've been selected to chair the UNESCO Bioethics Education Group planning effort. 5 meetings over the next 2 years. What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, the UNESCO chairs have head units within the HIFER group. And the plan within the HIFER group is that working with Amnon Karmi and several others, there will be a gathering of those who are within what they – it's funny because I can hear myself becoming a droning bureaucrat, right?
But stop it.
That's UN. But there is a sense in which the UN has failed in almost every effort to engage in bioethics until this UNESCO stuff. They tried to vote on cloning, and then countries that weren't doing anything on cloning all got together and voted that all forms of work involving so-called therapeutic cloning, meaning embryonic stem cell research, were evil. So countries that will never see a stem cell were voting against it, and they killed it on behalf of the UN. That's not good practice. Here in UNESCO, the head units, as they're called, that were built out of the Haifa Center, I think will be organized together in such a way that the leaders who are present in two-thirds of this session, along with a number of students, are going to meet, and our goal, at least my goal, is to build a framework within which it's possible to have global bioethics education that is not so arrogant as to pretend that there are supranumerary standards that absolutely everyone needs to embrace in teaching physicians. But by the same token, recognizes that bioethics does have some common components that are shared because bioethics has become a field, and there are some aspects of the UN and UNESCO Declaration of Human Rights that apply worldwide, and maybe working out that piece will be part of it. My real hope, though, is that the zillions of people out there who are demanding education in bioethics in major, major population centers, that we'll be able to find ways to make that happen. We had a couple of training sessions here, and I got to do a whole lot of teaching, and I really enjoyed teaching. Effectively, it was just a group of deans who were very smart and very engaged and interesting. But the truth is you can't teach someone to build a bioethics program or even to teach a bioethics class in 2 days. And you can't just hand them a curriculum and expect that they'll then be able to move forward. You can do your best to engage them, get them interested, and so on. But we all recognize that the next step is going to be to build more curriculum. And I hope that these next meetings that will involve and engage the center in a very serious way are going to be an opportunity for Center Practical Bioethics to sort of bring our nascent pragmatism and our practical orientation into the mix there alongside some other countries that have different views and different ways of doing things.
Dr. Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair for Bioethics at the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information, visit practicalbioethics.org. Practicalbioethics.org. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.